It's 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia. I am Sarah, and I am thrilled to welcome back to our airwaves once again, Dorothy Martin of Dorothy. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
It's not a problem. Thanks for having me.
So you just put a new album out, and I'm super excited to ask you about it. I have a bunch of questions about the songs on there. But first, I just want to let you know that all of the DJs here at WMMR are kind of upset with me, and it's because of you. And I will tell you why. Your last show in Philadelphia was on a Saturday in January, and it was the night of my wedding. So when you announced your show, all of my friends here at the station had already committed to going to my wedding, and they had to miss your show because of it. I just had to let you know that. I had to bear that burden.
Well, next time someone gets married, maybe we can just play the wedding, and
you
then
know,
everyone wins.
I thought about it for a little bit, but I got married about 30 miles south of Philadelphia, so there would have to be transportation and all this other crap, but it's fine.
Well, congratulations on your wedding.
Oh, thank you so much. And congratulations on your album release, 28 Days in the Valley, out now. I am in love with everything about it. And right now we're playing the single on MMR, Flawless. And I interpret this as an optimistic breakup song. But what does it mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, it is an optimistic breakup song, you know. It's a nice FU song to, you know, and I dedicate it to everyone, you know, that's kind of going through this or has a broken heart, because the situation that it's written about, you know, caused me a lot of pain, so this is a good way of dealing with it. I would much rather write a song than go to therapy and talk about my feelings and all that. Not that I'm knocking it. If it works for you, that's great, but this is something that it turned out to be a good thing, because I wouldn't be where I'm at today, and it gave me the drive, and it gave me, like, the, you know, the energy and the drive to want to succeed and want to, you know, break out and become something and turn the situation around. So it's very much a positive breakup song.
Right. You grow through what you go through, I think. I saw that there's also a track on the album called Philadelphia, and I got super excited when I saw that, because I thought maybe you wrote a song about eating pizza at Lorenzo's on South Street. Turns out that's not what that's about, although that would be awesome. Keep that filed away. But inquiring minds want to know, how did that song come about? Because it's one of my favorites on the album.
Oh, yeah, I love that song. You know, I love the alternative vibe that it has, and it's just chill, and it kind of just came about. It's just a sexy song. It's very flirtatious. It's a fantasy song. And, you know, it was named Philadelphia just because we thought that that was cool. And I do remember, by the way, getting the pizza there. And
wonderful.
Yes. I still have the picture. It was like a huge slice.
Yeah. It's like three times the size of your face. That's why it's great.
Yeah.
Especially at the end of a long night.
But yeah, that song is not about anybody in particular. It was the mood I was in at the time it was written.
Cool. Yeah, very sultry. But like I said, one of my favorites on the album. I also noticed that in the song We Are Stars, you spell stars with two A's. Please tell me why, because it's driving me nuts.
Oh, it's because that's how we sing it. You know, it kind of represents the lyrics. And sometimes we don't want to just be boring. We want to change things up a little bit. So we spelled it weird.
So the spelling came from adding the extra syllable.
Yeah.
Got it. I didn't know if maybe it stood for something or something like that.
Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
Open to interpretation. I like it. One of the songs that took me by surprise on this album is On My Knees. And it's not what I expected, because when you see a title like that, On My Knees, well, what I picture was someone begging for mercy or begging for forgiveness, sort of in a negative situation. But it's actually a really upbeat, kind of flirtatious song. It really threw me for a loop when I first listened to it, but in a good way.
Yeah, that's actually quickly become one of my favorite songs on the album, because it's so different. And, you know, it's a big risk-taking song. So I love listening to it, just because this was an idea that Linda Perry had. She's like, I have this song, and I listened to her version of it, you know, and I was like, I love this so much, you know. And it gave a completely different vibe to the record. I think the record really needed that song. I think it'll be really fun to play at like festivals and such. And I don't know, there's something about it that it's just so unique to itself and different. And not that any of the record is repetitive. I think that it's very dynamic. But yeah, this one especially stands out to me, and it's super fun to sing. So maybe that's why I like it.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And one of the things that I like about it, well, in general, in rock, I love hearing women flaunting their sexuality and not being afraid to be flirtatious. And that's exactly what this song is.
Exactly. That's what this song is about. It's about, you know, owning your sexuality and being upfront with it. And, you know, we all have that feeling. Does this person like me? Does this person not like me? It's kind of exciting. It's kind of dangerous. I might die. Oh, my God. You know?
that escalated so quickly.
Yeah, it did. It always does, right?
Like, yep.
It's about, you know, I'm putting my feelings out on the table. What does this person want? You know, let's go to Vegas and get married.
You know? Oh, God. Oh, God.
That crazy in love, beginning, fun, dangerous part of a relationship that she and her version was, she sent it to me and I heard it and I'm like, this is so cool. I know just how I'm going to sing this. And yeah, but it's definitely one of my favorites, even though like I try not to play favorites or it's hard to choose what you like the best, but I hope the fans like it. I mean, I can say that much. I hope they're really enjoying this record as much as we had a good time making it for everyone.
Yeah, totally. And you mentioned working with Linda Perry on this album, obviously an amazing songwriter, very accomplished, has worked with musicians of all genres. So what's the biggest lesson that you learned from collaborating with her?
To follow your heart. You know, it was amazing working with her. She's also my manager, and she produced the entire album at her studio in the Valley, and we recorded it in about 28 days. We did this album so fast. Everything was tracked live. Everything you hear is a real instrument played live in the studio, old school style. We did some pre-production. The band would play, and I would sing along in my vocal den. I had like this decorated on little goddess cave that had cactuses and lights and candles and incense, and it was just really fun. It was like I never once wanted to just leave the studio and get the day over with. It was like fun coming to work every day, so I'm really grateful. But yeah, I learned not to second guess myself, to really trust my gut, trust my intuition, my instincts as a writer. And as a vocalist, I played around a lot more vocally. Granted, my voice has been tired from touring and screaming on the last album, you know, over really loud guitars, which was also fun. But this was a different approach. We got to be more mellow, and it was awesome and incredibly eye-opening working with her.
Yeah, I feel like you and Linda Perry are sort of kindred spirits, and I love the way that this relationship between you guys is working out, especially since it birthed this amazing album. And also, to backtrack for a second, I love that you use the phrase goddess cave. I'm totally gonna steal that. Goddess cave, love it. And
my vocal booth is called the Goddess Cave. Yeah, weird, but
that's a perfect name for it. And 28 days in the Valley, I was gonna ask you about that. That makes sense now. You were 28 days in the Valley where that studio was. It's really a literal title of this album.
Yeah, and she thought of it. Actually, I gotta give her all the credit. She's like, what do you think of 28 Days in the Valley? I'm like, that sounds like a movie. I freaking love it. Let's do it. And it just kind of all tied together and tells this story. And I hope it takes fans on this journey of like psychedelic desert rock throughout California. Because when you're out here in California, where I grew up, you have the ocean, you have the beach, you have the palm trees. It's really laid back. I lived in LA for over a decade now. And I grew up in San Diego, but then we have the desert and people go out there and they trip on shrooms and they smoke and they go to festivals, and it's just the lifestyle. And we wanted to kind of paint the picture and also tell personal stories, you know, that have happened. So everybody wrote this together and was very involved and very passionate about it. And yeah, no, it's so weird that, you know, I sought out Linda and she ended up now managing me and doing this record because we have so much in common. She's actually from San Diego. Our birthdays are one day apart. We're both Aries. We both have tattoos. She has more tattoos than I do. But we both have, like, this butterfly tattoo on our hand. And it's just weird. Like, it kind of feels meant to be.
Yeah.
You know?
So you've got some new players on this album, and you sort of touched on that a minute ago. How do you get into a groove with people when you first start writing with them and performing with them? Do you sort of hang out with them first, feel it out a little bit, or did you just jump right into the studio, trust your instincts, hope for the best?
Well, another thing that was weird is her and I think a lot alike, you know, and she's like, I got the perfect players for you. And I go, okay, but have you heard of Eli Wolfmeyer? Because I saw him play at Piano Bar in Hollywood on Selma back when Piano Bar was still alive. And she goes, that's interesting because that's one of the players I got involved on the project. And I was like, no way, I've been wanting him in my band, you know. And
Elliot, it's like she has a crystal ball or something. It's crazy.
It's like she knows. She's scary. Like, she knows. She can read my mind when I walk in the room.
She's a witch.
And then we got Elliot Larango back in the band. He was my original bass player from the very, very beginning. So we always stayed in touch. And it just so happened that he was available and he fit with everybody else. And it just kind of all fell into place. And the way we kind of got our vibe going was going into a rehearsal space and doing pre-production for a bit. So we would jam. We worked out some of the old songs off Rock is Dead and revamped them and just gave them a little bit of a different twist that would help ease this transition between the two records. And also we want the band to play it the way that feels the best to them. And because every musician is different and has the right to express themselves,
sure,
and be themselves, you know, if they're faking it or they're doing something that isn't natural to them, then it's not going to work. So it worked to where we kind of gave the old record more of a Woodstock vibe, which flows perfectly into this record, which is so heavily 60s influenced and, you know, festival, Earth Mama.
Yeah,
you know,
I definitely picked up on that psychedelic vibe.
Psychedelic, exactly. So it kind of like, now it's taken the live show to a place where there's heavy and there is soft. There's a lot of dynamics. There's just a lot of there's a lot of journey happening. So I'm glad that it transitioned this way and it's working. So yeah, the pre-production is what helped everybody kind of gel and get to know each other. And we wrote some songs, just us as a band. The first song we wrote together actually was Naked Eye, which is on the Served Like a Girl soundtrack that Linda was part of and produced. And she got, you know, Pink and Christina Aguilera and Gwen Stefani on mm-hmm. that record. So, oh, my cat's meowing. He says hi.
Oh, what's your cat's name?
Wesley Stripes. I didn't name him. And he's a weird cat. He's kind of funny.
All cats are weird. I have two of them. It's crazy. But it sounds like it's really serendipitous how that whole situation came together. We know that you sing, obviously. You have an amazing voice. Do you play any instruments?
Yeah, yeah. I write. I have an acoustic guitar. I had a weighted keyboard that I got rid of because I put all my things in storage and went on the road. And but yeah, I have my Taylor acoustic guitar. I was actually thinking about going down to Guitar Center or maybe a pawn shop and looking for a nylon string guitar today, but we'll see where the day takes me.
Oh, very cool. Do you ever play that live? Because I haven't seen you play it live. Is that just for writing?
Yeah, I mainly write on it. I might bust out the acoustic for an intimate song at some point in the future. But right now, I like really enjoy performing and using my voice fully mm-hmm. and letting the band do their thing.
Okay, very cool. So last time you were on the air with us at MMR, you were on our morning show, the Preston and Steve show, and you told a story about a strip club. And you stated in this conversation several times, in fact, I love strippers, so I feel like you're going to have an opinion on this. I just needed to set that up instead of just crashing right into it. I co-host this podcast called Attack of the Brackets, and the other day we were trying to figure out what the best strip club song of all time is. You've got to have an opinion on this.
The best strip club song of all time.
Yeah. I was not happy with the conclusion that we came to.
What was the conclusion you came to? I have to know.
Closer by Nine Inch Nails.
That is just like that is just the most picked song. You know
right?
What? I would say the best strip club song of all time. This is a very, very hard question. I'm going to have to actually think about this.
You can think about it and then you can give me an answer at the MMRBQ if you want.
I have to really think about it because that's a serious, now you're like, you're putting me to the test.
Okay. Well, I'll let you think about it. You're going to be joining us at the MMBBQ May 19th, our kickoff to the summer concert season, big festival. We do it every year. Alice in Chains, Ghost, the record company, a bunch of others on the bill, and you guys. And people tend to ask what the warm-up rituals for a show are, but I want to know what your recovery is after a show because you wail live, and it is incredible.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. After a show, I usually just crash out in the green room for a second and try to compose myself. And then I usually eat and drink some tea or drink some water and take a shower and just try to kind of unwind naturally. It's really hard to come off that high.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't usually go to bed until 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, sometimes 6 in the morning.
Oh,
if
wow.
I'm really jacked up, depends how much Red Bull I've had. But I try to keep my day as normal as possible because it's easy to get carried away.
Mm-hmm.
But when I get off tour, it's like I can see how it affects you because, you know, I stay up late, really late. So, which is good because I like to be creative at nighttime.
Yeah, you're a night owl.
The total night owl. I'll just kind of, you know, shower and chill, pop a melatonin, watch some live music DVDs or listen to an audiobook.
Nice.
I know that sounds really boring, but I have to do that kind of stuff to kind of unwind.
Or else you'll be awake until noon the next day.
It's happened.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. Sounds like you've got a plan in place to prevent that. You know, it's been really interesting to hear the evolution in the singles that we've been playing on MMR. Started with Dark Nights, which is more of a rocker, and then we had Down to the Bottom, which still has that bluesy vibe, but was really swampy. And now we've got Flawless, very vulnerable, a bit softer, very Janis Joplin. So out of all of these things, what can we expect to see from you live at the MMBBQ? What side of Dorothy is going to come out on stage?
I think we're going to do the songs that are probably the most popular because we want our fans to be happy and we want to give them a good show. And, you know, usually at festivals we get a shorter set time. So we're going to cram in, well, we'll put a good set together for you guys. We got to work it out still, but we're going to do a little bit of both albums so they get a little bit of both. And obviously Down to the Bottom because we play that at every show.
Yes, that is awesome. And I'm happy to hear that you're still going to be pulling from the previous album, Rock is Dead, because I really like that album too. What are some of your non-musical influences?
Non-musical influences.
Could
Give
be
me an example.
Love, could be nature, could be your cat.
Oh, yeah. Relationships, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships are like the best thing to write about, or just personal struggles, things I've been through, things I struggle with. I've had substance issues in the past, and I talk about it very candidly. Not an issue anymore, but I still deal with my genetic makeup and how I am, mm-hmm. and it affects my life. So to turn that into a song and to relate to other people is a gift, really, because then it helps, you know, me helping myself in that way could possibly help someone else. And then it makes it all worth it.
What's the response like from fans when you put yourself out there on a song like Flawless, or I mean, pretty much any of the songs on 28 Days in the Valley? You really open up. What has the reaction been like?
You know, my inbox has gotten flooded with, you know, hey, Dorothy, I just broke up with my boyfriend and what's your advice? Or I'm getting a lot of advice questions from fans about their significant other, which I'm a little hesitant to answer because I feel like every person should base their decisions off being true to themselves. I mean, that could be my response. I wouldn't want to influence somebody.
My advice is that I have no advice for you. Do your thing.
Or just be true to yourself, you know.
Yeah.
But people have been really like, thank you so much for writing this song. I totally relate to it,
mm-hmm.
which is good. I'm
nice.
Glad.
That's really cool that they can relate to that and you can have that back and forth. You've got a video up for Flawless. It's on WMMR.com, and the style of it visually reflects that desert psych rock vibe that we talked about earlier. Lots of color, lots of nature. You guys are in the woods and then you're on the beach. It looks like it was a lot of fun to make that video.
It was. We shot it really quickly in 2 days with Kai Aarons, directed it in Los Angeles in the valley, and we did do a scene at the beach. It was awesome. It was really fun to do. And the camera that they used was amazing. So it turned out beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. And I like to watch it on days like today where I'm looking out the window in Philadelphia and it's just dreary and rainy. So I watch that to sort of remind me that summer is indeed on the way. Well, congrats once again, Dorothy, on your album, 28 Days in the Valley. It's out now. Go pick it up. It's awesome. And we will see you live at the MMBBQ on May 19th. Thanks again for taking the time today.
Thank you so much.